Tonight's shiur in Parshas Naso. Pasuk says, "Ve'ish es kedoshav lo ye, ish asher yiten lekohen lo ye." Chazal tell us that the drash in the pasuk is "Ve'ish es kedoshav lo yu," that if a person keeps his trumas and maisers for himself and doesn't give it to the kohen, that which he's supposed to separate, 10% meiser, if he keeps it to himself and doesn't give it, so in the end he's going to be remaining with that 10%. Normally you would keep 90%, give 10%. If he doesn't do so, he'll remain with the 10% only. Ve'ish asher iten lakohen lo yeh. What a person gives to the kohen, that is really what he takes with him in the next world. It says in the Gemara in Bava Basra, story with Munbaz HaMelech, that Braisa tells us, the Maisa, that this Munbaz HaMelech, he gave away all his treasures in the time of a drought to help the people. So his brethren, his father's house, said to him, Avosecha ganzu vosifu al shel avoseim, avosam, our fathers, they put away, stashed away more and more money and added to the money that were put away from their fathers. But Tamavaz Bazam, you're just giving it all away. So Munbaz answered them, Avosai Ganzu Lamata Vanigan Znasti Lamala. Yes, they gathered together, they put away their money here, down here, but I'm putting away up there in Shemai. My fathers Ganzu Bamakum Shayat Sholetetpo. They put it in a place where the Yachalet people can get a hand on it, whereas I'm putting it away in a place where nobody can touch it. My forefathers, they put it away for others, for the future generations, but I, what I put away, the tzedakah that I do is in Shemaim, and that's for me and solely for me. It's a story told that before the First World War, there were two superpowers. There was Russia and Germany. Now Russia, they used their strong arm to guard, to make sure that the price of gold would artificially stay very low. On the other hand, they charged tremendous taxes for things imported, like silk and the like. Very, very expensive. They slapped on a lot of high taxes. So there was once a Yid that said, hey, he found himself a wonder for Parnassa, since gold was very cheap in Russia. And he would go to Germany, and he would takes this gold with him, and which he got for very, very cheap in Russia, and he would sell it in Germany for a high price, and then he would buy silk, etc., and bring it back to Russia and sell it very, very high prices. So things were going good until one day he put away in his suitcase a whole bunch of gold bars, which he purchased cheaply in Russia, and is making his way to Germany. So of course he didn't take the main road, since what he was doing was of course illegal. So he would go through the forest. So one day as he was traveling, he gets a call from behind. He turns around and he sees a policeman on a horse. Uh-oh. He got very nervous. The policeman says, "Good morning." He says, "Where are you off to?" He says, the Yid says, I'm going to visit my sister." And why exactly are you traveling through the forest if you're going to visit your sister in the city? He says, "Well, you know, I like the vegetation and the trees and, you know." So the policeman says, "Yeah, you know, you're right. I like it here also. It's a very nice place." So they're walking along, the policeman on his horse and the Yid carrying this very heavy suitcase. So the policeman proceeds to ask, he says, "What exactly is in your suitcase there?" So he said, "Oh, just clothing, just clothing." He says, "Oh, okay, fine." Now, by now, the Yid was schwitzing like crazy because he was schlepping this heavy suitcase. Now, he had, was giving the impression that there were clothes in there, which don't weigh that much, but really there were these bars of gold, which did weigh a lot. And he was walking along, and he couldn't show, though, this policeman that, you know, he was struggling carrying this seemingly suitcase full of clothing. So he was, you know, putting on a fake smile and schlepping this suitcase along, pretending that it didn't weigh as much as it really did. He was schlepping. So finally, they got towards the end of the forest, and the Yid said, okay, finally I see the end, I'll be able to go to where I'm going, until the policeman says, okay, stop right here. Put down your suitcase and open it up. The Yid said, uh-oh, now I'm doomed. Sure enough, opened the suitcase, full of the gold bars, says, you're under arrest. So he's all upset. He says, oh, you. So the policeman says, excuse me, what are you so upset about? Listen, you're doing your job, I'm doing my job. Sometimes you're successful, sometimes you're not. Sometimes I'm successful, sometimes I'm not. This time I was successful and you're not. What are you getting so uptight about? So the Yid said, what am I getting uptight about? I'll tell you what I'm getting uptight about. Fine. Okay, you caught me. I understand. But I don't understand. You, at the beginning, when you met me at the beginning of the forest, you right away obviously suspected what I was doing. So why didn't you make me at least open the suitcase over there? Why did you make me schlep it all the way to the end of the forest? Only now you're telling me to open it up. So the policeman said, that's what you're angry about? What do you think? I'm going to be your schlepper? I should schlep your suitcase? That's the mashal. What's the nimshal? So too with the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara tries to convince, and does unfortunately convince people to do averus. They say, oh, it'll be great for you, you'll have this, you'll have that, it'll be enjoyable, it'll be fun, or whatever. And the person says, oh yeah, great, and he does it. And in the end, boom, he sees this person is being taken for a ride, because in the end he gets paid back big time. He gets punished for all he did, and in the end, and therefore he was ended up being a schlepper for the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara got him, thought, oh great, I'm doing this, just carrying all the averas, and then in the end, boom, you're going to have to pay back big time. Galinsky remembers that when he was in Siberia, one night, after a very hard day of labor, we were sitting and talking, he said, and amongst us were two brothers from the Ponsky family. They were a very, very wealthy family in Kovna. So the wicked communists came, and not only did they take everything that they owned, but they and turned them into paupers, but worse, they sent them into Siberia for the terrible crime of being rich. So one of these brothers said to Rav Galinsky, there's two people that I just cannot forgive. For the life of me, I cannot forgive them. Who are they? The Rav of Kovna, the Dvar Avraham Zatzal, and the Rav Aponovich. So he said, what? He said, what? What are these two great Rabbanim? Why are they guilty for your tragedy? She says, I'll tell you why. She says, they came more than once to my mansion to try to, get me to give money, encourage me to give money for Torah and Staka. So I gave nicely. But they said, you know, there's a tremendous need, and they wanted me to give even more. And I get angry at them. And now I'm angry at them. Why am I angry at them? He said to Rav Galinsky, because why didn't they come to me with a pistol in their hand? They should have forced me to give all this money. Why? The communists came with a pistol in their hand and they took everything. He said, wouldn't it have been better if they would have come and I could have given all this money to Torah and Stuck and have this to my schus? Instead, I gave all this money to the communists. So the other brother, he butted into the conversation and he says, you know what really, really gets me angry? He says, the communists, they stole all of our possessions that we've been worked so hard for 300 years. So when I think about it, I shake. He says, it comes out that that which I and my father and my grandfather and my great-grandfather, everything we did, all we worked for Stalin. So Reb Galinsky said, when I came to Eretz Yisrael, I told the story to the Panovitcher Rav, in fact. And he remembered very well this fellow. And he said, sadly, you know, I remember that when I asked them to give even extra, a little bit more money, the brother said, if we're going to give so much to Torah and Staka, what's going to be left for us? And I told them, the opposite. What you give, that is what is going to be, you're going to have for yourselves later, i.e. the next world. And you know what? They just laughed. The Gemara tells us in Psachim that there's an inyan to darshan smuchim. When there's two or more parshas written together next to each other in the Torah, there's always a connection. It's not incidental that these parshas are written next to each other. And they can be darshan. So he said, we find in our parsha three inyanim next to each other. One, giving trumas to the Kohen, as we mentioned before. As we mentioned earlier. The next parsha adjacent to that is the parsha of Sota. And right after that, the parsha of Nazir. Now, what is the connecting theme between these three parshas? He says, mankind can be divided out into two groups. Smart people and fools. Now, what is a smart person? Well, it says in the Gemara in Tamid, Ezeo Chacham Horoe Sanola. Somebody who sees the future. As an aside, it's a cute joke, that in the Gemara in Shabbos, a midwife is called a chachama. Sounds like a wise person. A chacham. Chachama is a midwife in the Lashon of the Gemara. So they say, why is she called a chachama? Because we say, Ezeo chacham haroe senolad. So since this midwife sees the nolad, sees the child being born, so that's why she's called the Chacham. She's a Zeu Chacham, a Roes Anolet. Anyways, a Chacham, as we said, is someone who sees the future. In other words, he doesn't live in the present to enjoy and run after his pleasures, his desires in this world. But rather, he keeps in mind that there's a future. There's an Olam Haba, where a person is going to have to give a Dimei Cheshbon. And on the other flip side, if he does what he's supposed to do here, he's going to be rewarded in the next world. So that's a chacham. He doesn't just live for the here and now, but he takes into account what's going to be in the future. And in the future, that includes what's going to be in his Olam Haba. Truth is, he says, that this idea is, besides in the Ruchniyistika world, we see it's innate in the nature of many people in the physical sense as well. He says once a fellow came to him and he was he's having trouble financially. Why? He explained that he was living in a apartment, but he grew out of it as his family grew and larger, and he needed a bigger, more space. So he decided to sell that place, and he bought a bigger place. Now his mortgage was quite high, and it was like choking him. He couldn't afford it. Hard to make ends meet. So Rav Galinsky proceeded to ask him, and he says, wait a second, let me ask you a question. Let's say you wouldn't have sold your smaller place and you would have rented it out. How much money do you think you could have gotten for rent? He says 4,000 shekels. Okay. And if you were to rent a place like you're in now, a bigger place, how much would you have to pay for the bigger place? She says, let's say 6,000 shekels. So Rav Galinsky says, so let me understand. Therefore, if you would have rented out your smaller place and rented your big place, you would have to come up with just an extra 2,000 shekels a month, correct? He goes, yeah. Well, how much are you paying now monthly for your mortgage? The guy says, 5,000 shekels. So he says, what? He says, isn't that a chaval, isn't that a waste? Yeah, 3,000 shekels a month extra? You could have just rented out your place and rented a bigger place, and you would have only have to, you know, shell out 2,000. Now you're shelling out 3,000 more. No wonder you're having trouble. So he said back to Reb Galinsky, no. He says, come on, you can't compare. He says, because I bought this place, okay, I'm paying 5,000 shekels a month, but in 20 years, this apartment is going to be mine. So, says Rav Galinsky, what do we see from here? This person is willing to live a life of scrimping and saving and being choked and for 20 years so that eventually he'll have a place of his own. He says, so too, that's how we have to look at our ruchnius lives as well. Okay, might be a little bit hard here and there, whatever, to give money, to do mitzvah, but think of the future. It'll be yours, and you'll be able to live like a king in the Olam HaMemes. Person has to roes anola, he has to see this future. Can't have limited vision. Brings here Maisa, there were two women, and they both were complaining about their husbands. Similar complaints, that they were not giving enough of their money, even though they were somewhat wealthy, but they weren't giving of their money to help support the family. And so both of the wives came complaining. To whom? To Rabbi Shmelka Nicholsburg. So, fine, the Rav called them in. Let's call them Reuven and Shimon. And asked them what the story is. So he turned to, Shmelka turned to Reuven and says, how come you're not, you know, giving enough money to for your family? So he says, listen, the truth is, Rabbi, let me be honest, I'm matzliach very much in my business, and I have quite a bit of money, but listen, they say that the world is a galgal, it's sovev balam, you know, it's like a wheel that turns, and who knows what's going to be tomorrow, and years go past, and, you know, the old age is going to rapidly approach, and with, you know, we know it comes with old age, sickness, etc. And who knows how much money I'm going to have to pay out then for doctors and medicines, whatever. Therefore, I'm saving whatever I can for my old age. Okay, so then Rav Shmelka turned to Shimon and said, and what do you have to say for yourself? So Shimon had a different story. He said, listen, he says, person doesn't know what's going to be, and I don't know what I'm going to be able to come up to the next world with. Therefore, the reason why I don't give too much money to my family is because I'm giving up, I give out all my much tremendous sums of money for tzedakah and for supporting Torah, so that in the end I'll have what to come up to the next world with. So it comes out that, yes, both Reuven and Shimon are Roas and Nolan. What's going to be about the future? Reuven, what's going to be with his old age? And Shimon, what's going to be with his Olam HaEmes? So in the end, the Rav gave them a bracha. And he said that the Kadosh Baruch Hu should save each of you, Reuven and Shimon, with that which you were afraid of. So it shouldn't happen. So therefore you, Shimon, you were scared of, you know, you're going to die all of a sudden, who knows, and you're not going to have what to take with you to Shemayim. So Hashem should save you from that, from what you're scared of, and you shouldn't die all of a sudden, you should live a long life. Then he turned to Reuven, he said, Reuven, and what were you scared about? You're scared about that you're going to, yes, live a long time, you're scared about your old age. So Hashem says a nice word here. Chazal say that v'haya when we have the word v'haya, it's in the Torah, it's lashon of simcha, and vayehi is lashon of tsar, where it says in Megillah. So the Mefarshim try to explain why is v'haya lashon of simcha and vayehi a lashon of tsar. It has a nice idea. He says haya, the word haya, not v'haya, but just haya, means was, is the lashon avar, it's past tense. When you add the vav v'haya, it's called vav v'hipuch. It changes and takes the past and turns it into the future. V'haya means it will be. Meaning that if a person connects the past to the future, in other words, like we've been saying, he keeps an eye on the future, and roes anolad. So that's lashon simcha, because then he'll save himself from all kinds of obstacles, because he keeps his eyes on the future. However, vayehi, the word yehi, is lashon atid, is future, and the vayehi, the vav in front, again flips it over and makes it to the past. He goes, that's the way of the Rishayim, that every time they come to the future, they're upset about the past. They said, oh, why didn't I do this? Why didn't I do that? Oh, yeah, I shouldn't have done it. Why? As the Chazal say, Rishayim Maleim Charatot. The Rishayim are full of regret. That's the, and therefore, Vayehi is Lashon Tsar. There's no great tsar than that, than having regret because one doesn't look into the future. And until the future comes, and then he regrets what he had done in the past. Now back, let's return to the original question we had. What's the common link between giving the donations for the Kohen, then the Sota, and then finally the Nazir? So we mentioned before that Roes HaNolad, someone who is Roes HaNolad, he makes sure to give tzedakah. He gives tzedakah, he makes sure he gives to the gifts of the Kohen, he gives what he's supposed to give. Why? Because he has an eye out on the future. I'm parting with my money. What's going to be? I'm giving away this money. It's my hard-earned money. But in the end, you'll only benefit. You'll have what to take with you to the next world. So somebody who doesn't do so, and he keeps the matanas kahuna for himself, he doesn't give it. So what happens? Rashi brings us, he says, if you're ma'akev, you're matanas a kohen, chayechash, it's yitzarech lobo etzlo, lavilo etz a sota. In the end, you're going to have to bring a sota. What's the connection? It's a very logical connection. Because what's a sota? A woman who's unfaithful. A woman is unfaithful, what is she doing? She's not roa es anolad. A woman is unfaithful, she has to realize that there can be terrible, terrible negative ramifications, repercussions, right, when she goes with another man. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, she can explode becoming a sota. But she doesn't think about that. What does she think about? The here and the now. Oh, I want this enjoyment, whatever it might be, running after Tivus. She doesn't think about the future. Where did she get this from? Her husband. If her husband lives a life of not looking into the future, and therefore not caring about his future, and as a result not giving them matnas kahuna, so that's going to rub off on his wife. Memela, he's going to have a wife who also lives for the present and not for the future, and doesn't realize and take into account future ramifications. And therefore will end up perhaps being a sota. And then what comes next to the parsha of sota? We have the parsha of nazir. As Chazal say, why? What's the connection between sota and nazir? That if a person sees a sota, then he should yazir asmo min hayayin. Meaning what? That he is told that you have to look into the future. And therefore you see what wine can do. So take that into account, and don't get yourself involved with pleasures, with wine, etc. It can lead to negative things when in the future. That's the common link between these three mitzvahs, that a person has to be a chacham, that's roa es anolad. one last idea. Speaking about the Sota, Rashi says in Maseches Sota, Daf Beis, Amud Aleph, he writes, Haroa Sota Bekilkula, says Rashi, Lokashihi Mikalkelas Maaseha Umeavetes Drachea, Ela Benivula Uboshta Sheminavlim Otabash Kasa Ubekabala Sancha. What are we talking about when we say to a person that sees a Sota Bekilkula, that she should, a person like should, that sees this should stay away from wine and become a Nazir? Bekilkula, says Rashi, doesn't mean when she's doing her bad things or running away around with other men. No. Bekilkula, Rashi, has been nivula b'boshta, when she's being punished in the Beis HaMikdash and she's drinking the waters and her eyes are bulging and her stomach's splitting, and that's the Sota Bekilkula. So Galinsky says, you know, it's a Pella. Where is this happening exactly? Where is this woman going through this terrible torture? In the Beis HaMikdash, in the Azara, in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, who's in the Azara? Who's going to see her over there? Somebody who's going there to purify himself. He's, I don't know, going to bring a korban, he's going to daven, and to become a, you know, a higher person and to elevate himself, etc. That's what the Beis HaMikdash is for. And what happens when he's there? He sees this terrible tragedy of this woman, that she drinks this water and her face turns green and her eyes bulge out, etc., etc. And this is what this person's viewing. This person who wants to grow in higher levels, and he sees this terrible thing. So why does such a person have to become a Nazir? I mean, we're not talking about some guy off the street, you know, and he sees, hey, look what's happened to this woman. Oh, I don't want this to happen to me. We're talking about this person that's in the Beis HaMikdash. What is he doing there? He's trying to be to elevate himself, and he's seeing this terrible thing. So isn't that enough? It's a high-level person seeing what this woman's going through. Finish. He's not going to do anything bad. Why does he have to make sure to stay away from wine, so shouldn't come to things like this? What? Surely such a person is not going to come to this. The answer is shocking, he says, based on a famous Midrash Tanchuma and Parsha Shemini. And the Maisa over there was with a Chacham and Chassid, that his father was an alcoholic. Whenever he had a moment, he was always drinking. And as a result, he would very often, he would be lying there in the streets, drunk, and the children would be, you know, throwing stones and mud on him or whatever. And he was so embarrassed, his son was so embarrassed of his father. And he one day said, Abba, I just can't anymore. You're embarrassing me. Look at the way you're acting. He said, do me a favor. He said, I'll give you whatever, all the wine you want. Just stay home, okay? Just stay home, I'll supply you with your wine, all you drink and drink is to your heart's content, just stay home. So fine, his father agreed, and the son brought him wine, at least kept his father, you know, out of the streets. One day, the son is walking through the streets, and it's a stormy day, and it's raining, and he sees, on his way to the Beis HaMikdash, another person who was drunk. And he was like lying there in a puddle of water in the rain, and there was a gutter that the water was rushing down and dripping down on this drunkard, and the kids were cursing him out and throwing mud on him, etc. And he didn't feel a thing. He didn't even know what was going around him. He was so drunk. So the son said, you know, here is a golden opportunity. I'm going to bring my father here and show him, look at this, look at the disgrace that this drunkard is bringing on him, and maybe he'll wake up. So sure enough, he brought his father there to look at the sight. So the father looked, and he immediately went over to this drunk, he bent down, and he heard him saying to him in his ear, where did you get such wonderful wine that brought you to such a state of drunkenness? You mommy, you don't feel anything that's going on. Wow, I got to get some wine like that. Where'd you get this wine? So the son said, Abba, this is why I brought you here. I want you to see this shanda that was happening to this drunk person. Understand that this is what you look like. So the father said to the son, listen, my son, what can I tell you? He says, Ein li tanug v'gan Eden elazeh. He said, I have no other pleasure. This is my Gan Eden. Drinking is my Gan Eden. There's nothing more I can ask for in the world. So the son saw that nothing doing here. Says Rav Galinsky, what do we see from here? That somebody who's addicted to his taivas, when he will see the onesh and the disgrace that comes from it, what is he going to see? He's not going to see that. He's going to see only the wine. And so too over here, when a person, he could be in the Beis HaMikdash, he could see this sota going through this bush and herpa, exploding in the Beis HaMikdash, but he still has to mazir himself from wine. Why? Because what is he going to do? Somebody that is involved with this taivas, he's going to see this sota and, hey, where did she, you know, get that wine, you know, to be able to do what she did? He's going to miss the point. The person doesn't see clearly somebody who is addicted to his taivas in this world. So you shall be zoiche to control all our taivas, to be able to roas anola. We should see the future, and we should hope for only good things in the future, and especially future which will bring us the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu Yimheru Bimeinu.